The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, and the Dayton Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Adrian McKinty. Hello, Adrian.
Hey, how are you?
Excellent. Adrian, I've wanted to talk to you about your work for many years. I am a huge fan of your series featuring Detective Sean Duffy. Tell us about this series.
Well, I've been writing fiction for about 5 or 6 years, and I started in Denver as a high school English teacher, and I'd been teaching short stories and things like that. And then the kids sort of goaded me into writing my own short stories, and that became longer fiction pieces, and eventually became my first novel, Dead I Well May Be, which was set in New York. And Dead I Well May Be came out in 2004, and it didn't sell that well, but it critically did well. And I had an opportunity back then to go into the BBC and pitch. They asked me to come in and pitch a TV series to them because they'd heard about Dead I Well May Be. And so I went in and pitched a TV series to them, and I thought, what about a cop show set in the 70s or 80s featuring a detective in Belfast during the Troubles? And I thought this would be a good idea for a show, and it would be set during the Troubles, and a copper trying to solve ordinary crimes while in this chaotic period of Northern Ireland from 1970 to about 1990. And I pitched this to the BBC, and they turned me down flat, and I was a new young writer back then, and they said, look, can we give you some advice about your writing career? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And they said, look, son, nobody in Northern Ireland wants to hear anything about the Troubles. The Troubles had just ended at this period. It basically come to an end in 1998. And this is 2004, so it's about 6 years later. And they said, no one wants to read about the Troubles in Northern Ireland. You can forget trying to sell this in the Republic of Ireland. Nobody cares about Northern Ireland in the Republic of Ireland. And as for England, they wish the whole island of Ireland was towed out into the middle of the Atlantic and sunk. And as for trying to sell this in America, just forget it, mate, because in America, they still think it's the 1950s and the Quiet Man over here. So they're going to be completely baffled by the Troubles, Belfast, sectarian civil war. And if I can give you some advice, never write about Northern Ireland. So I walked out of that office that day, and I felt like I'd been given wisdom from on high, and I thought, well, he's absolutely right. I went to bookstores in Belfast, and I never saw any mysteries set during the Troubles. And so for the next 5 or 6 years, I wrote about everything else that I could think of except for Belfast. I wrote about I lived in Denver, so I wrote books set in Denver. I'd been to Cuba quite a lot, and I set books set in Cuba. I wrote books set in England. I'd lived in London. I lived in Oxford, and I'd set books there. And I never wrote about Belfast. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, I was staring at a blank computer screen and wondering what the next book was going to be and didn't know. And I started writing the first opening line of The Cold, Cold Ground. And I read the first line, and I thought, well, that's pretty good. And I wrote the next paragraph, and I thought, well, that's a really nice paragraph. I'm quite pleased with that. And then I wrote a page. And then to my horror, when I reached the bottom of the page, I thought to myself, well, there can only be one place this is set. This is obviously taking place in Belfast. And I was, my heart sank because I thought, well, oh my goodness, no one's going to want to read this. And so I wrote the first page and then eventually the first chapter. And I was aghast because the action wasn't shifting to England or America or anywhere else. The book defiantly stayed in Belfast for the next 300 pages. And so with a sinking heart, I sent it to my American publishers, and they, of course, rejected it immediately. And I sent it to another American publisher, and they rejected it. and I sent it to 10 more American publishers, and they all rejected it and said no. And so I thought, well, the guy is right. The guy at the BBC is absolutely right. No one wants to read this. But then I sent it to my English publishers, and they loved it, and they said, absolutely, we'll publish this book. And then about 6 or 7 months later, it came out, and it ended up getting the best reviews of my career. And so that's basically how the series got started.
Wow. That's a great story. Adrian McKinty joins us, and we're talking about his series, which features the detective Sean Duffy. And it's set during the Troubles in Northern Ireland. And you know quite a bit about the Troubles. You lived through them. We probably do have some listeners out here in Ohio who don't know what that was. What were the Troubles?
Oh, well, what happened was in 1921, Ireland was partitioned, basically. There was a civil war in Ireland. The English wanted to get out because they basically ruled Ireland for 800 years, but there was a huge war after World War One, and Britain was exhausted. They wanted to get out, and so they basically, as the English always did when they left a place, they partitioned Palestine, they partitioned India. You know, this is the way they leave countries when they're folding back from their... They even petitioned North America. You know, there was an English part in Canada, and there was a United States part in the South. Mm-hmm. And so they petitioned Ireland into a North and South. Basically, the North was for the Protestants who wanted to stay as part of Britain, and the South was for the Catholics. And that would have been pretty simple, really, except for the fact that there was a rather large Catholic minority in the North, and they never accepted the partition. And so for about 50 years, this rumbled along in the background. And then in 1968, basically, all-out civil war broke out between the Protestants and Catholics in the North. And that continued for the next 30 years. And the British had no clue what to do. And the police was largely seen as a Protestant institution. And so the Catholics didn't trust the police. And so the British sent the army in. And for the first couple of years, the army were seen as an honest broker between the Protestants and Catholics. But then in Derry in 1972, the army killed 13 peaceful protesters in Derry. And so during a riot or a demonstration. And so the Catholics lost all faith in the army, as you would. And there was no honest broker anymore between the Catholics and the Protestants. And then just for the next 30 years, there was basically what was, in effect, a low-level civil war between the Catholics and the Protestants until 1988, when finally all parties came to their senses and there was a peace treaty. But in that terrible 30 years, 3,500 people were basically killed during this period of the Troubles. And I thought it would be fun to take a... I grew up in a very, very working-class Protestant housing estate in the North Belfast suburbs. And I thought it would be fun to take a Catholic and make him a policeman so he's not trusted by anybody, because the police force is basically 90% Protestant, so the police don't trust him. And put him, this Catholic policeman, in the house where I was born and grew up, and put him in the street with all my neighbors and all the people I knew, and have him try to survive in that milieu. And I thought that would just be pretty delicious for a writer to have all those amazing fracture lines, because he's a Catholic, he's a policeman, he's more middle class than the working class people in the street, and he's from Derry. There's always been a Derry-Belfast rivalry. And I thought I can really have fun. And I'll make him a bohemian, and they're all dear conservative Protestants. And I thought I can really have fun with all those different fracture lines. And so I just put him in the house where I was born and grew up, and put all my neighbors in the book too.
Adrian McKinty joins us. His new detective Sean Duffy novel just coming out, Rain Dogs. And I've been trying to talk to Adrian for years, and we finally tracked him down when he's in the States to record this interview here at WYSO. And wow, I love the fact that every time Sean goes outside to his car, he always checks underneath it for bombs. We love that structure as a reader. It's just it creates that foreboding and that sense of tension.
Well, I mean, policemen had to do that all the time because about 6 or 7 policemen would be killed every year because the IRA came up with this incredible bomb device called the Mercury Tilt Switch Bomb. And basically what it meant was you could slip into a policeman's driveway at night and put this bomb under the driver's side car, of the driver's side seat of his car, and it was had a mercury tilt switch. And that basically meant it would lie dormant. It could lie dormant for months, in fact. And eventually the policeman would get in his car and go for a drive. And at some point during that drive on this island, it's a very hilly country, he would reach a hill. And then the mercury would fall down the vial of the test tube and would reach the contacts of the explosive device, and it would blow up into about 2 pounds of plastic explosive, and it would just rip the car to shreds. So it was an incredibly effective bomb device. And the only way to defeat it was every morning you got out and you inspected carefully under your car. And if there was a bomb, you called the bomb squad. That was the only way to deal with it. But a lot of times policemen were in a hurry, or there was an emergency, or it was raining really hard, and they would run out to their car and just get in and drive, and eventually they would reach a hill and they would be killed. And so Sean Duffy has to do that. He has to do that every single morning. And where that comes from is that in real life, I used to get a lift to school with this guy who was a major in the British Army. And he had to do that every morning. And his son and me and my little brother would all get a lift up to school. And our school was the top of a giant hill. Mm. And he would say, okay, lads, wait in the living room. And he would get out and look under the car for a bomb. And then when it was all clear, he'd get in the driver's seat. And he would tell us to get in the driver's seat. And we'd all drive off to school. And this went on for a long time. And then I remember one morning when it was snowing and really, really cold, he just said, oh, let's forget it. And we just got in the car and we drove to school. And he didn't check under the bomb. And didn't check under the car for a bomb. And his son was sitting on the front seat, and he was sitting in the front seat. And my little brother was sitting next to me in the back seat. And I was just sitting there in the back seat next to my little brother having this absolutely major existential crisis, thinking, oh, my God, today we didn't check under the car for a bomb. You know, we could all die. And for about 5 minutes while we reached that big hill up to the school, I was just sitting shaking, terrified, knuckles white. And I was even more furious about it because my little brother was completely oblivious, listening to his Walkman in the back seat. And the other two didn't care. They were sitting listening to the radio, you know, completely oblivious. And of course, we arrived at school and there was no bomb and everything was fine. But I thought it would be quite fun to take that moment and stick it into the novel, which I more or less did verbatim in the first book.
Adrian McKenty joins us. His Detective Sean Duffy novel, Rain Dogs, just released here in the U.S. And in this book, you do have a senior policeman who you name Ed McBain. And I'm guessing this must be your way of paying tribute to the great writer, Evan Hunter, also known as Ed McBain.
Yeah, he was really kind to me when I was starting off as a novelist. Like I said, my first book came out, Dead I Will May Be, and it flopped. No one bought it. Like I said, I got some really nice reviews, but, you know, reviews don't really sell books. And the book just came out, and it flopped. And then, out of the blue, unsolicited, Ed McBain, Evan, sent a blurb into my publishers. And he said that he really loved the book. It was like a really nice bit of writing. And if they wanted, they could use his name on the blurb of the paperback edition. And my publishers hadn't been planning to bring out a paperback edition. But about a week after Ed McBain sent in a blurb unsolicited, Frank McCourt also somehow found the book. And he sent in a blurb unsolicited. And then my publishers thought, well, my God, we've got a blurb from Ed McBain. We've got a blurb from Frank McCourt. We can plaster this all over the paperback edition. And so about 6 months after that, a paperback edition came out. So I feel that I owe both Ed McBain and Frank McCourt big time. Both of them have passed on now. But, yeah, this was my little tribute to Ed.
We had Ed in studio for an interview on September 10th, 2001. What a sweet guy, and really enjoyed meeting him. Let's talk about the story, Rain Dogs. Give our listeners a little teaser about what it's about.
Well, it takes place in 1987, and in Carrickfergus there's an enormous 800-year-old castle, and our detective Sean Duffy finds, or his deputy finds, a body in the castle, and the castle is locked and bolted at night, and it's behind an enormous iron portcullis, and this body is lying at the bottom of one of the walls. And so it's this journalist from England, and she somehow got into the castle and killed herself. And we know it's not a murder because no one could have possibly got into the castle, and no one could possibly have got out of the castle. So she had obviously sneaked in off the tour at the end of the day before, climbed up to the top of the keep and jumped off. And when the police arrived, they thoroughly searched the castle, and there's no one else in the building. And so it's definitely a suicide because no one else could have done it. But as the case progresses, we find out that incredibly, it is in fact a murder, and it's what is called in mystery circles a locked room problem. How did the killer get in? How did they murder this person? How did they get out? And in fact, I've constructed it as a locked castle problem. And when you're constructing one of these, you have to be completely honest with the reader. There's no magic tricks. There's no secret tunnels. There's no sleight of hand. And you have to give the reader all the information so they can figure out this puzzle for themselves. Because I hate it when readers cheat when there's something like this, but I don't cheat. I put all the information up there, and I let the reader figure it out for themselves, along with Sean Duffy, our detective.
And Sean has some expertise in these types of puzzles. In a previous book, there was another one in a pub.
Yeah, I love the locked room. I love the locked room genre. And I knew that when I gave him a locked room puzzle in book three, I could never do it again. It would be impossible. The chances of a policeman ever having one of these in one career are infinitesimal. Uh-huh. And to have two in one career is so impossible that it would be ridiculous. And then I thought of a way where it actually might be possible. And in fact, the fact that he had one in his previous career, I don't want to give too much away, is an influence and a necessary problematic condition for him having one in this career. So it's all to do with probability and the fact that he could have two in one career, and that's the reason why he helps solve the whole mystery. So I really don't want to give too much away, but yes, this is his second locked room mystery, and they are strangely and oddly related.
And that was In the Morning, I'll Be Gone, the third book, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
What I wanted to do with that one, I wanted to put a locked room mystery inside a noir thriller and see if I could get away with it. Because the locked room mystery is very much a 1930s genre book. In the 1930s, there were lots of locked room mysteries in what's called the golden age of detective fiction. I wanted to see if I could put a golden age 1930s trope inside a modern noir thriller. And I think I just about got away with it.
My guest is Adrian McKinty. His new Sean Duffy novel, Detective Sean Duffy with the Royal Ulster Constabulary, is Rain Dogs. And he joins us by telephone today on the program. You also have a fun little cameo in here. Here in the States, we're still reading about the BBC scandal and Jimmy Savile and the sexual abuse scandal and the BBC completely overlooking this pervert who's like a national celebrity, and you have him in your book.
Yeah, I met him in 1980 and when I was a kid, and I found him deeply disturbing and creepy. And apparently I was not alone. Thousands of people met him and found him really disturbing. But he got away with this, basically this reign of terror for 30 years because he was this famous BBC employee, maybe the most famous employee of the BBC of his day. And he had extraordinary access to power. He had Christmas every year at Margaret Thatcher's house in Chequers, the Prime Minister's family estate, and he was an unofficial godparent to Princesses William and Harry, and he dined with Princess Diana and Prince Charles and the royal family, and Mrs. Thatcher made him a knight. Pope John Paul made him a papal knight, and all that sounds fantastic until you discover that, in fact, he was maybe the greatest serial pedophile, necrophiliac, child molester, psychopath of his era. And it was an open secret for 20 years that this guy was a dangerous criminal, and yet he got away with this reign of terror for two or three decades. And when I met him, I had a visceral horror and disgust of him. And I thought, well, I've got to put this guy in the book and put him in when he visited Carrickfergus in Belfast. I'll put that in the book. I'll have him as one of the elements of the mystery. And just open up this can of worms as much as you could in 1987 without hindsight. And I have Duffy trying to investigate this really unbelievable story of cover-up, deceit, deception, and one of the most dangerous psychopaths of the era.
The book is Rain Dogs. Adrian McKinty wrote it. He joins us in the Book Nook today on WYSO. Adrian, another element of the Troubles is that because of the unstable situation and the violence in Northern Ireland, it was very discouraging for business, for commerce. And in some of these books, we have examples of people trying to run factories in Northern Ireland and the difficulties that they faced. I was reminded, I had a friend years ago who had a DeLorean, and that's an element in one of your stories. And in this one, we have this group of Finns that come in, and they're thinking about opening up some manufacturing in Northern Ireland. And, of course, they're all falling over themselves trying to encourage these Finns to pick them for their factory location. And these Finns are a wonderful part of this story. In fact, Sean actually makes a trip to Finland, and that is really creepy.
Yeah, I know. I mean, basically Northern Ireland in the 80s was a complete industrial wasteland. I mean, there was nothing. I mean, in my town, they had three huge factories in 1979. There was this big factory called ICI, there was this other one called Cordals, and there was this other one called Gallagher's, and they made plastics and cigarettes. And within 9 months, all three of them closed. And in the town of 30,000 people, there was 15,000 men made redundant. And so unemployment went basically from zero to about 90% in a year, and everyone was just unemployed. My father lost his job. Everyone on our street lost their jobs, and it just became this industrial wasteland. And if you have an industrial wasteland in the middle of a civil war, I mean, it's like trying to get somebody to invest in Syria at the moment. It's just not going to happen. And so the British government, the Irish government, everyone was desperate to get anybody to invest. And so hence in 1982, they invited John DeLorean to open up a car plant in Belfast, and that lasted about 2 months before ending in ignominious failure. And they tried to get the Finns, basically they tried to get Nokia to invest in Ireland, and they did in the end, but they invested down in Dublin. And that's one of the sort of the subplots of the book. And I have Duffy go to this terrifying place in Finland, which is on a frozen lake, this island across the frozen lake, which I actually went to when I was a little bit younger. And you basically drive across this frozen sea on an ice road to this island where he meets this terrifying Finnish guy who I don't want to give too much away, but it turns out he's a major plot element of the story, this really chilly, dangerous Finnish guy.
I love the history that you give us for Mr. Eck.
Yeah, Mr. Eck is a very complicated character. He's based on an even more complicated character, a real-life figure who, let's just say, had an extraordinary military career. I did a lot of research on this man, and it's almost unbelievable what he got up to in his military career. It's just one of the most extraordinary stories that you'll ever read in your life, and I basically have a thinly veiled version of this guy in the book. And when you read, I do a little afterward at the end of the book where I tell you who's based on real life characters in the book, and when you read about him, you'll realize that Duffy is against an incredibly dangerous man.
I'm not a big fan of reading books based on blurbs, unless the blurb is from someone that I really admire. And I actually discovered your Sean Duffy series because I saw a blurb from a writer that I admire a great deal. He's been on this program a half a dozen times. And Ian Rankin had a blurb that said, quote, "I hear the sirens in the street blew my bloody doors off." I can just hear him saying that.
Yeah, Ian, I've been very lucky. I got blurbs from Ian for this series, and I got, again, people I admire. So I got blurbs from Ian Rankin, who I admire greatly, and I got blurbs from Val McDermott, who I really admire, and then I got a blurb from Dan Woodrell, and that just made me sit down on the floor and cry, because Dan Woodrell is like one of my heroes, and I just thought, the fact that I've gotten three readers, and those three readers are Val McDermott, Ian Rankin, and Dan Woodrell, I said, I don't care if no one else reads these books. The fact that these people like the series is enough.
Well, Daniel is on my list of people I'll probably never get to interview, but I would love to, and I'm glad to be able to cross you off my list, Adrian, because I wanted to interview you for a long time, and we have just enough time to talk about something that I found intriguing. A couple years ago, you put out a standalone book called The Sun is God. What a bizarre book.
Yeah, I know. I basically unearthed, it's basically a true life story. For one reason or another, too complicated to go into now, I find myself in Papua New Guinea. And while I was in Papua New Guinea, I uncovered this incredibly bizarre murder case where this island of crazy German naked coccivores had gone to this island to set up a utopia. And in this island, they believed that if they only ate coconuts, which is the fruit closest to the top of palm trees, which is closest to the sun, and if they only sunbathed and went around naked, they would live forever on this crazy little island in New Guinea. And they didn't live forever. As you can imagine, they all died of malaria and malnutrition, and one of them murdered another one of them. And I thought, oh, my God, this story is too delicious not to write about. So I investigated it, and I wrote this fictionalized version of these events called The Sun is God. And I had a lot of fun researching that and writing about that story. So that just came out as a little standalone book based on an insane true story. And a lot of people looked at the summary of that book, and they read the first couple of chapters, like in the bookstore or online, and they thought, this is so nuts, I'm not reading this book, without realizing that, yes, it's completely nuts, but it's also true. So, I didn't have to do much imagination there, because the truth was very much stranger than the fiction.
It was truly strange. Well, I've got to say that I was so thrilled. I thought that the Sean Duffy series was over, and when you started putting out more books in this series, I was absolutely delighted, and I hope that there are more in our future.
Well, I don't know, but I really love writing the character, and I really love finally writing a book that's set in Belfast, which I feel is true to the people of the situation and true to the humor of the situation. And too many books that take place in Northern Ireland are utterly humorless, and that's certainly not my experience of what people in Ireland are like, and not my experience of what people in Belfast are like. And so I've enjoyed giving readers a slice of what Northern Ireland is really like, not the Hollywood version at all.
Well, thanks, Adrian.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been Adrian McKinty. The book is Rain Dogs. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes.